happy talk, keep talking happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do.
Hi folks, this is Richard's Roundup with me, Richard Sirott, along with my sound engineer and editor, Michael. Right, before I introduce you to our very interesting and very talented guest today, who's here with me in the studio, I thought I'd have a little bit of a rant. I'm sure most of you or a lot of you heard the expression dead as a dodo. Basically, it means something is dead, completely dead, non-existent, dead. The actual phrase comes from the dodo bird, believe it or not. This bird really did exist. It lived on the island of Mauritius right up until the 17th century. Slightly strange looking bird, a bit like an oversized turkey crossed with a duck. Very amiable little animal, bird, had two squat legs and tiny wings so it couldn't fly and it waddled about. The main problem it had was that it wasn't afraid of human beings, and if it was cooked, it tasted rather delicious. Consequently, the locals ate it and the visiting sailors ate it, and eventually it became extinct, completely extinct, not one left. So you're probably thinking, well, what's the relevance of that? No big deal. Well, the thing is that if every wild animal in the world became extinct, then the human race would also become extinct. So there's my little rant, and to find out why I had that little rant, it's relevant to my next guest's play, and the gentleman is called Floyd Toulet, or Toulet, is it Floyd?
Toulet.
No. Toulet. Yeah. Greetings, Floyd. Hello, after Richard. My little rant, explain the significance of that in terms of your play.
Well, first of all, great to be here, and I couldn't agree with you more. I'm here to really talk about a play called Snared, which was originally a stage play. And the theme of it is precisely what you're talking about. It is the exploitation of animals on a scale now that it's reached a tipping point. So, for example, in Africa, almost every year we're hearing of one or two species. They're usually lesser known, so they don't make the news, but they are they're being either poached to death or killed because we're breaking the food chain in other ways. And the play Snared is an opportunity for listeners maybe to hear arguments that they haven't necessarily heard before. It is not a didactic play. It's not telling people what to think, but it is inviting them to think. So
it's presenting opinions on both sides.
Exactly, right? Yeah. I mean, if I can just give you a description of the play itself.
Absolutely.
There are two key characters. One is called Rudy and one is called Emily. And Rudy is a South African poacher of a certain age, so he comes with a certain degree of baggage from his background. And he's an illegal poacher as well as a hunter. And there is a character called Emily Hart, who is an environmentalist, a conservation officer in Zambia. And she arrests him out in the bush for allegedly killing an elephant. Now, whereas ordinarily they'd be taken and he'd be taken back into the town to be charged, there's a storm coming. So they are, for various reasons, are obliged to spend an evening together in the bush. And she snares him using one of his own snares cord. And a snare is like it's a wire trap. So an animal would walk into it and it triggers the mechanism and it snatches around their arm or the neck or whatever. So he is snared in his own trap.
Before you go on, I've seen a film, you know, with charities on advertised, they show pictures of animals that have been snared. And am I right in thinking if it's like, for example, it's the animal's leg? If they're not taken out of the snare, they will die.
Yeah, absolutely.
It
is a horrible, horrible way to die. It's very, very slow. So it's a bit like the tradition that someone was describing to me the other day. It's a bit like an old-fashioned pair of handcuffs the police used, where the more you move, the tighter it becomes.
Yeah.
So obviously an animal's instinct, if it's sore, it pulls
yeah.
It gets stuck. And you do, unfortunately, get animals who it's not intended for as collateral damage. So a small elephant, a calf, will inquire, see something there, bend its head down, put its head into the trap, and it goes around the throat. And it takes weeks for the animal to die. It's horrendous. It's really, really horrible. So
yeah, sorry for interjecting, but I mean, that totally makes the point. Sorry, continue about the play.
No, it is really vile. It's horrible. So yeah, so to sum it up, the two characters are locked with each other overnight as a storm was approaching. And there's a third character who's an African ranger who's away for that period of conversation. The man, Ranger, the Rudy character, the South African, believes that he's going to be killed and executed because for various reasons in the story. So he tries to argue his way out of it through various... He tries to engage with the woman, flatter her, threaten her, and she has to hold her counsel. And it's a bit of a chess match, psychological chess match. One's playing against each other.
Are they black and white? The woman's white.
No, that's a very good point. They are both white, and that's sort of part of the reasoning in the play. Because one of the things you will find if you do any research at all on Google, if you're in the West and you Google poaching in Africa or whatever it might be, you will find page after page after page of extremely well-meaning people, individuals, organisations, celebrities, but they are almost always white because we're in the West, we tend to hear our own voice a bit like being in an echo chamber. What you don't hear is the African voice. And one of the things snared in Africa, this event, which is going to take place on November the 10th of this year, when we actually air and broadcast a play, it is going to be a chance for Africans to actually finally be voiced and be heard. So what I mean by that is after the play is broadcast, we will also be offering radio stations like Your Good Selves a recording of a Q&A session, which will take place in summer of this year. It's be bolted onto the end of the play. It's there as an option. And it will have very well recognised people, experts in their field, to answer. But the questions predominantly will be coming from African countries. So people, rangers, individuals that we're currently talking to now. We want normal people's opinions. People live with the problem. Because it's not all one-way traffic. If you're a small village and you've got elephants trampling over your maize field...
I understand that.
They're not, they're not popular things. So it's a tricky one.
Well, I mean, it's also probably a provident time for it to happen because only in the news yesterday, the southern white rhino, the last one was a male has died, and all that's left at the moment is his daughter and granddaughter.
It's awful. Right?
And they're hoping possibly to artificially inseminate them.
Yeah. But what a state to have arrived at.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. And what made it particularly awful was the fact that this... it was a beautiful animal and it was domesticated and it was lying in one of the its keeper's arms while it was being put down. People forget that a lot of people think that animals don't actually have feelings but they do. I get so wound up about this. Yeah. Now, you were saying about, villages in Africa, they get... they don't like elephants because they trample on their crops, etc. Mm. What about the... because a lot of people think there's a lot of poverty in Africa, which presumably there is. Mm. So I would assume that people that are on the breadline would argue, what's more important, our lives or the lives of the animals?
Yeah.
I don't know whether if they eat the animals or for example, with the elephants destroy the crops. How do you... counter this measure, or how do you sort it out?
Well, it's again a very good point. One of the people that we're very, very, very lucky to have on board with SNED is a lady called Cheryl Mvula. She's actually married to one of the cast members. She was recently awarded an MBE for her work, and she works in a variety of organizations as a consultant with a particular emphasis on exactly that. She looks at places in Africa, in communities that are growing, and the conflict between their needs and the needs of the wildlife are increasingly in tension. What she does is offer solutions working with them. She doesn't tell anyone. She actually works with these people, tries to understand what their needs are and what they need to do to deal with it. But she works with them, and through things like, for example, I don't know if you've heard of ethical tourism. So instead of just sending people out on a trip to Kenya, for example, and bouncing around in a Land Rover and looking at animals, they do a sort of slightly different version of that where that involves the local people. So instead of a company getting the money and maybe giving a few pennies to the locals get the money. So that makes it in their interest to keep the animals going, to keep habitat clear, And what happens is that there becomes a natural line between where the locals are prepared to live, and they won't go beyond a certain point.
Yeah.
It's not perfect by any means, but Cheryl Mbula, as I said, she's got a huge expertise in that. Another very silly example that she told me, which I loved, is they genuinely do live in villages where elephants come in, because the elephants are desperate for food themselves, because their traditional areas have gone. They will come in and they will trample a village to death, you know, they're just whatever in the way, to get to food. And obviously the first instinct, as anyone would be, is if you've got a gun, you would kill the elephant. Cheryl, working with people, come up with a beautiful little solution. Elephants apparently really don't like chili. They don't like chili at all. So what they do is they just grow chili bushes around the perimeters of the village. An elephant will come, have a little sniff, and disappear very rapidly. So it has two benefits. It keeps the elephant away from their food. But B, they've also got a harvest of chilies, which they can actually sell to make money. So it's things like that. It's
simple but fantastic.
It's a wonderful idea. Absolutely wonderful.
So on the other side of the coin there, you say that the elephants come to these villages and trample them to death because they're hungry. So what about the other side of the problem, the fact that they're losing their natural habitat?
Absolutely. I think the way it was described to me, and I'm really not an expert when it gets to this level, but the way it was described to me was, if you leave nature to itself, it will resolve. It will find a way. It may not be perfect, it might not be wonderful, but it's okay. The problem that we have is we're interfering so aggressively that it has no option. So every time we take a bit of land or push it in that direction, it's the area is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. Even that, I've heard, could arguably say, well, all right, the numbers would reduce through natural, you know, death and not being able to sustain the same population level, but it would still be there. But we're not content with just doing that. We're not only taking their land away, we're also going and poaching them for horn, ivory, and anything else that pops into your head, you know, so that they're being decimated on every level.
And yeah, because I think another thing people don't realise, this sort of cycle of life process and how one thing of one animal or one creature affects another. When elephants do go along a trampling earth, there are beetles that live off its dung. The way the land is seeded, pollinated, is affected by where the elephants might trample down bad bush that chokes good flowers and that sort of thing. So it's an ongoing knock-on process that goes all over. Mm. And it, as was said at the beginning, eventually, it will catch up.
Oh, absolutely. Mango. And it already is. Yeah. It already is. There are already areas in Africa now, exactly what you just said, that are suffocating under weeds that are being destroyed. The crops can't grow anymore because basically the balance of nature is no longer in balance. And it's going to take a lot of work and effort to put it right. But in order to do that, we have to stop the boat going in the wrong direction. And we are most definitely going in the wrong direction at the moment.
Now, you were saying before, you said about that it was a great idea with villagers being involved with ethical tourists and making money on that basis. What about the horrendous big game hunters? Mm. Why aren't the various African governments, why aren't they banning it? Presumably it's because there's money involved.
Yes, exactly. I mean, one of the storylines in Snared is that it touches on that, which is you can't look at, you know, you can't deny that corruption exists everywhere. There's corruption wherever there's money, there's corruption.
Sure.
And so absolutely the idea that you can go out and you can shoot a lion because it is a certain age and not understand that there are consequences to that is absurd. Apart from being cruel and malicious, it's absurd. And what's happening is prides are breaking down. People are walking away getting with a lot of money, but it won't last. It's a very finite argument. And the argument, ironically, they're currently using people pro-trophy hunting, is they breed the lions in what they call canned hunts. So they breed lions specifically for purpose that they'll get to a certain age. And I found that quite an appalling concept until it becomes even more appalling when it's described what actually happens. One chap who actually witnessed this, you have a lion who, although it is captive, it's what you've just said, it's become very friendly to people. Mm. All it's known is friendly people, because when it was young, it was used for photo opportunities. So tourists come and stroke the lion, oh, isn't it a lovely little cub? So it has no fear of people.
And it was hand-fed.
Yeah. So come the day where it's now going to go off and shoot, they open the gate, and it has no interest in going anywhere. So they actually drug the animal, they drag it into the middle of nowhere, it's bewildered and confused, and then you get some clueless guy who spends $15,000, $20,000, whatever it might be, to go and sit there with an Uzi and kill a lion who can't even see it, it's so drugged up. And if it did, it would come over and lick it. It's horrible.
About a year ago now, that American millionaire dentist.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, exactly. Well,